ओम ज्ञानति मिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
This Srimad Bhagavatam is the actual substance of the Vedas, as established in the verse previous to this. That actual substance is the source of everything, Krishna. That Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost Vedic literature, is established in this verse and in the next verse. In the verse previous to this, a very philosophical exposition, it's a philosophical exposition of the Supreme Truth. In the verse that is to follow this, apparently a different mood is introduced, where the hearers are exhorted to drink the rasa of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, philosophy and rasa, they don't seem to mix. The path of jnana is always rejected in bhakti. Arasagga kak chushe jnana nimba phale, rasagga kokil kai premamra mokule. In the conversation between Ramananda Rai and Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's stated, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, recorded in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that those who are ignorant of rasa, they are like crows, which is an analogy taken from Srimad Bhagavatam, in which the literatures which do not directly glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called, what are they called? Anyone? Vyasatirtham. Yes, a pilgrimage place for crows. It's sarcastic language, because crows don't have any concept of pilgrimage. So arasagya kak chushe, those who are devoid of bhakti rasa, their cultivation of jnana or knowledge is compared to crows sucking neem fruits. Has anyone tasted neem? Usually you take the leaf and not the fruit. You generally have to go to India to taste that. You can get it here now? No. So what did it taste like? Very bitter. Very bitter, very bitter, yeah. Well, that's also one kind of rasa. But devotees are interested in madhurya rasa, sweet rasa. And rasagya kokil. Now, kokil, this is translated in Srila Prabhupada's books as cuckoo, although it's not really the same species as the cuckoo that we get in the West. Who's seen a cuckoo? All right, you don't see them much, do you? They hide away. But kokil is often seen in India, and they look actually somewhat like crows. They're very black, but their body is more slender and graceful. So devotees are compared to kokil. They sing very sweetly, and they're compared to the kokil, the cuckoo that eats the buds or the prem buds or the buds of the mango tree. The kokil, the bird, eats the buds of the mango tree, and the devotees are compared to the kokil that eats the prem bud. Now, Srila Prabhupada, his introduction begins, I was commenting on this the other day, the very interesting observation that the conception of the Absolute Truth and the conception of the Supreme Lord are not on the same level. Which is actually, of course I don't know Czech language, but the second sentence comes first in the introduction, and it kind of, I would imagine it kind of spoils the flow, because the first topic that Srila Prabhupada introduced, is it Czech or Croatian? In the Czech, yeah. It kind of spoils, I mean, it's Srila Prabhupada starts off with a certain premise and then introduces the Srimad Bhagavatam as that which harmonizes these two. So that's something for the translation department. We've kind of lost the spirit there, in it seems, by putting the second sentence first, or maybe left out the first sentence altogether. I don't know. Anyway, it's something to look into. So, that the absolute truth is rasa is described in the Upanishads. Raso vai saha. The Upanishads deal with knowledge and that the ultimate reality is rasa is described therein. It means Krishna is rasa. He is everything about him is sweet. Now, some people say that, or some supposed to be devotees say that, well, we just like the sweetness. We don't want all this. Knowledge is dry. You may remember reading in one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita where it stated that the Sahajiyas, they decry Jiva Goswami, and they say you shouldn't read any books. They say Jiva Goswami is just a philosopher and you should just don't read any books. And this refers to, there are different species of Sahajiyas, Prakriti Sahajiyas. So, many of the Prakriti Sahajiyas, they do study Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the 10th canto, 5 chapters dealing with Rasalila. But there is a certain sampradaya which is still there in Vrindavan, it's called the Hit Harivamsa sampradaya, in which they say that, we don't study any philosophy, we just recite the songs of our founder, whose name was Hit Harivamsa, which is full of bhakti ras, and there's no need to do. Better don't do and don't study any philosophy. Well, that's maybe suitable for Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. We don't find any descriptions of them studying Vedanta or Srimad Bhagavatam for that matter, although they weren't ignorant of these topics. At least we find the gopis accusing Krishna that in a previous life you've always been mistreating women. You do it in every time you come. As Ram, you mistreated Shurpanaka, who, and she wasn't so bad, but you for a small offense you had her nose cut off. And then again you see that Bali Maharaj, he very liberally offered you whatever you wanted, and you just you took everything away from him, tied him up, and then threw him down into hell. So, what kind of a character are you? It's not surprising you're cheating us. So they said that they had heard these things from Purnamasi. So they knew. Maybe not all the Vedas and Vedanta, but they were not unaware of topics. Vedanta or Puranic topics. Yeah, but for conditioned souls, simply to hear about the beauty of Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna, without understanding who is Krishna, will not fix them in devotional service. So, Vedyam Vastavam, this is the Srimad Bhagavatam, is the actual subject of the Vedas. So, that is to be understood with the mind. It's topics of knowledge. Is that correct? Wait a minute, you have to ask it in Czech before you start to think about it yourself, before you use your mind to think about it. Well, it's true. I mean, thoughts do sprout and blossom within the mind, but only simply by mental processes one cannot understand Krishna. It requires purified intelligence, and that purification comes from bhakti. As for instance, there are many pramans many evidences in this regard. Tell us one. See, devotees, they learn so many verses, but then when you ask, they can't fit. Yes, this one fits here. They're learning like machines. So it's good you learn verses, but you have to learn how to apply them also. Anyone? Yeah, I saw. Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grahyam Indriyai Sevon Mukhe Hiji Vado Swayam Eva Spurati Adaha. Alright, you can give the translation of that. Just simply with the senses, including the mind, one cannot understand Krishna, but when the senses are purified by service performed to him with an attitude of service, then Krishna reveals himself to that person. But then how will we get the inspiration in the first place to serve Krishna? Well, we may get some inspiration by somehow or other coming in contact with or having acquaintance with the beauty of Krishna, songs about Krishna, and so on. But we will, in such a state, we will process Krishna through our conditioning, so that we, in worldly consciousness, everything we see, touch, smell, taste, feel, remember, consider, we do so through the filter of what's in it for me, personal sense gratification. So even when we consider Krishna, we think, well, how can I enjoy Krishna? Therefore, it's required to obtain the knowledge of our constitutional position in relation to Krishna. This is called sambandha gyan, understanding our constitutional position. How many times have we heard this term? Understanding our constitutional position as servants of Krishna, we can properly take to abhideya, or the process of devotional service. And if the sambandha gyan is correct, then by performing abhideya devotional service, it leads to the actual prayojan or necessity, which is Krishna prema, love of Krishna. But if the sambandha gyan is not correct in the first place, then even though we perform devotional service, it won't lead to Krishna prema. We have to get pointed in the right direction and then go on our journey. If we're not pointed in the right direction, then we'll go in the wrong direction. Yeah, so this knowledge is required in devotional service. Not the dry knowledge of the gyanis, who are simply... it's not actually really knowledge at all. They're just trying... In the name of knowledge, they're trying to avoid Krishna. That knowledge simply makes the heart dry and hard. But Krishna is not dry or hard. Krishna is moist and soft, or rasa is moist and Krishna is soft. You can't, rasa means it has to be tasted through liquid. If it's dry, you can't taste anything. Yes, if the palate is completely dry, you can't taste anything. Suha. Suha. Sukha roti. Dry chapatis. If it's very hot day, just like you don't really know what a hot day is in Czech Republic, but it's a very hot day, you don't have any water to drink, you just have dry chapatis to eat, then it's not at all relishable to eat. Yeah, it's the same word, sukha in Hindi, means dry. But there's another kind of knowledge, rasa gyan, knowledge of rasa. Vayam tuna vitripyama utama shloka vikrame tach chinvatam rasa gyanam svadu svadu pade pade. This knowledge is to be tasted at every step, that knowledge which is so relishable, which, yeah, all right, first of all, this knowledge is to be tasted at every step. That knowledge which is so relishable that one's never satisfied, one always wants more. That is knowledge of great activities performed by he who is praised in the best verses. That is rasa gyanam, knowledge of the taste, or what is rasa, knowledge of rasa. Yeah. Now we'll find in the Bhagavad Gita that knowledge is much praised, especially in the fourth chapter, which is specifically dealing with jnana yoga. And generally this is understood to mean in this chapter it's being discussed about this kind of impersonal knowledge, or knowledge leading to an impersonal realization. Srila Prabhupada has been criticized for translating every verse in relationship to Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Anyway, we don't care about the criticisms. Here's one verse in which Srila Prabhupada here's a verse from the fifth chapter, discussing about how knowledge cleanses the heart. Now this is a Prabhupada classic, in as much as there's nothing directly stated about Krishna or bhakti in the verse, but the purport is absolutely about tad buddhayas tad atmanas tan nishthas tat parayana gachantya puna avritin gyana nirdhuta kalmashaha. When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge, like shelter, are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. Do you have a... I should have got the check. Bhagavad Gita, you must have it here. Srila Prabhupada starts the purport, at least in the English edition. The Supreme Transcendental Truth is Lord Krishna. 5:17. Just immediately, what is the subject of knowledge? Immediately Prabhupada brings it to the point. The whole Bhagavad Gita centers around the declaration that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the version of all Vedic literature. Paratattva means the Supreme Reality who is understood by the knowers of the Supreme as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So like this, Srila Prabhupada, the whole purport is not a very long purport, but he goes on to explain everything in relation to Krishna, which is actually the point of Bhagavad Gita and of all the Vedic literatures. Jnana nirdhuta kalmashah. One who has knowledge, he's cleansed of all misgivings. Kalmasha actually means dirt. Srila Prabhupada translates it here as, the example is, by knowledge one is cleansed of dirt. And dirt here, Srila Prabhupada explains this to mean misgivings. I don't know if you have an exact translation of the word misgiving in Czech. It's a kind of subtle word. It means doubt, but it means just not exactly a doubt of, just like, I'm not sure whether Prague or Brno is the capital of Czech, but it means like distrust of someone. It's a doubt mixed with distrust. If someone tells you Prague is the capital of Czech, and you think, well, maybe he's saying that just to cheat me. Like that. It's not just the fact that you doubt, but you doubt the intention of the person also. So it indicates a lack of trust in Krishna. It's just like we may preach to people and they can't really reply, or philosophically they can't give an answer, but still they just don't want to accept it. Or people try to invent so many allegations against devotees because they just want to avoid the implications of this philosophy, which is surrender to Krishna. Just like this, there's this Ritvikvad, which is quite popular among a certain group of, what's the great adjective, demented people. And they bring out, demented means mentally warped. Dementia, yes. So they bring out very beautifully produced color magazines, but the subject matter is just all the faults of ISKCON, real, imagined, and exaggerated. But, even if it was all true, it doesn't support their theory. It's got nothing to do with their theory. Even if everything they said was true, still doesn't mean that their theory, that their so-called philosophy is correct. So they want to avoid the... like that. People want to avoid surrendering to Krishna. So these people, they want to avoid the clear and obvious fact that Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples to initiate others, and that this is the tradition which is gone on since time immemorial and will go on despite various colorful magazines which certain people produce, notwithstanding the problems within that have and are and will be experienced in that system. So by knowledge one should be cleansed of misgivings. There has to be trust to receive knowledge. So I guess the purpose of that magazine is to break people's trust. But actually, if people actually were developing faith in Prabhupada and love for Prabhupada, then they should speak always about Krishna, as Prabhupada did. Srila Prabhupada, he did point out the faults in various wrong philosophies, but he was focused on praising Krishna, glorifying Krishna. He didn't start a campaign, for instance, to vilify the Gauriya Math. He said a few things, but he didn't, you know, it wasn't like the major point of his preaching, the only thing he had to preach about. So when one is freed of misgivings, then one is prepared to surrender to Krishna. And that is the knowledge which is given in Srimad Bhagavatam, as described in the first verse of Bhagavatam. The first verse of Bhagavatam establishes Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that this Krishna is not simply some distant Lord, but the supreme lovable person. He is to be approached through love, through bhakti. This is outlined in the third verse. So, Vedyam Vastavam, the actual point to be understood in the Vedas, is Krishna and Krishna bhakti. And Srimad Bhagavatam is not just something that leads us to bhakti, but by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam, say that first. Bhagavatam is not something that just leads us to bhakti. It is not simply outlining a process of knowledge that we can leave behind when we come to bhakti. But by hearing Bhagavatam, bhakti is awakened. Bhaktir utpadyate pungsa. The subject matter of Bhagavatam is the subject matter for hearing for rasika bhaktas, or those who are relishing the mellows of bhakti. So, Shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. This Srimad Bhagavatam is auspicious, and it uproots the threefold miseries. Namely, the adhyatmic, adhibhautik, adhidaivik, miseries caused by one's own mind and body, one miseries caused by other living beings, and miseries caused by natural disturbances. Now we'll find that all the parts of the Vedic literature, it's considered auspicious. Yeah, all the parts of the Vedic literature, it's by following it, one is expected to enter auspicious life. To observe dharma is considered auspicious. To observe dharma is auspicious for oneself and for others. And the acquisition of artha and enjoyment of kama and pursuit of moksha are all to be done on the basis of dharma. But Srimad Bhagavatam rejects cheating religion, cheating dharma, and declares itself to be Shivadam, that which bestows auspiciousness. In other words, it's stating that ordinary dharma is not really auspicious. To act according to dharma means to do that which is auspicious, which is good for others. Thus we find at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was in a dilemma. He didn't know what to do. This was based upon various personal reasons. He didn't want to fight with those he loved. And he thought that, well, even if we win, what's the fun if everyone we love is dead? And also from the point of view of dharma, he felt it was, which is true, it's wrong to fight with and attempt to kill one's gurus. And he was afraid that if all the men all the kshatriyas who are supposed to protect society are killed, then rogues would take advantage, pollute the women, and therefore all of society would be filled with Varna Sankara and it would be a big mess. Sorry for the long sentence. So anyway, Krishna explained to Arjuna why he should fight, and at the end came up with the most revolutionary statement, to give up all kinds of dharma anyway. That means to give up all kinds of cheating dharma, because any dharma relating to our condition within this material world is ultimately cheating for the soul. Because auspiciousness in this world cannot go beyond living a pious life, or in the ultimate issue, attaining liberation. But all of these without Krishna bhakti is simply cheating for the soul, because it does not situate us in our constitutional position. The well-known example is that of the fish out of water. Whatever desirable items are offered to a fish, As long as this fish is not in the water, he'll always be uncomfortable and unhappy. So that throughout the Vedic literatures, activities pertaining to dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are described as shivada, or that which gives auspiciousness. That's another kind of cheating. It's only relative auspiciousness, but it is not ultimate auspiciousness. It is true that it's auspicious, but it's not the param satyam. It's not connected with the supreme truth. Srimad Bhagavatam is actually auspicious because tapa trayon mulanam. It uproots the threefold miseries. These threefold miseries pertain or accrue to the living being because of his non-connection with Krishna. Only pure devotional service is capable of fully uprooting the threefold miseries by completely cutting out here it said unmulanam, uprooting, by taking out the root of material desire. So all these points are elaborated on later on in the Bhagavatam. They're merely stated here that only pure devotional service is capable of completely stopping entanglement in material activities is described by Shukadeva Goswami. Anyone? Another important verse. Kechid kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana aghang dundanti kajnena neharamiva bhaskara. It's a little bit slightly different perspective. That only pure devotion, kevala bhakti, of those who are actually attached to Vasudeva, Krishna, can fully uproot desire for material enjoyment, which is the cause of repeatedly sinning, just like only the sun is capable of dispelling fog. So there's another important point that, see, bhakti can be executed, or some kind of bhakti, some kind of devotional activities are executed by persons who are actually more interested in dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. But they're not kevala bhaktas. They're not on the path of pure devotion. And they're not Vasudeva Parayana. They're not attached to Krishna. They're attached to dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Therefore, their devotional service is not truly shivada. It's not truly auspiciousness bestowing. It's not truly devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praised as Amandodaya. His mercy is described as Amandodaya Daya. It means that it's non-harm-producing mercy or non-malefic mercy. Whatever good we try to do for others in this world is always mixed with harm. Certain welfare workers are highly praised. Mother Teresa of Calcutta is highly praised as the greatest saint of the modern age. But by emphasizing care of the body, she simply increased the bodily concept of life. Although we may not say so outside, but this idea in Christianity that your body is revived from the dead, and then when on the day of judgment, and then it's either shot up to heaven or thrown down to hell, it's just rooted in the bodily concept of life. According to the so-called Saint Augustine, they had to speculate, well, what kind of body? Because you know, some people die at the age of 2, some people die at the age of 90. So he said 30 years old. You get a 30-year-old body. So this is an example of an attempt to, some kind of attempt to approach God, but with, based on ignorance and what kind of theological muddles you get into. So Srimad Bhagavatam is presented on the platform of knowledge of the personality of Godhead. And although definitely it's much more entertaining to tell lots of stories and make everyone laugh, that wasn't generally Prabhupada's policy, Srila Prabhupada's policy. But he always tried to inculcate in his disciples knowledge of the Bhagavatam as given by the previous acharyas. By understanding this one, attains actual auspiciousness, attains to devotional service, and this way goes beyond the miseries of material life. The miseries of material life, they are attempt to be reduced in by dharma, artha, and kama, although I don't really reduce them at all, it's just shifting from one part of the hot burning copper plate to another. And the attempt to attain moksha is an attempt to avoid the miseries, but it also misses the point because there's not knowledge of Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam gives that knowledge of Krishna by which everyone can be benefited. As Srila Prabhupada writes in the translation, or he presents in the translation, this is a Prabhupada aphorism, is how he words this. It's brilliant. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. There you are, just a few words. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. There you are, that's the highest truth. So many philosophers trying to understand for so many years what is the highest truth. Srila Prabhupada, on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, states, the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. So we should go on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam so we can distinguish reality from illusion and thus be benefited. Just like you were telling me yesterday that you'd been listening to a philosophical lecture, but then you had some attraction to hear something about sport, but you turned the radio, but then you couldn't hear it because there was no taste after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, is there any question about this, please? Sorry, it's a bit disjointed because it's one of a series of lectures. I know it's a bit heavy early in the morning. Yeah, okay. Gadadhar used to read Bhagavatam to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And often, especially the stories of Dhruv Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj. Yeah, so.
In a devotee society, there are often persons who are trying to act prematurely on higher levels.
Yeah. What should we do? Throw them out the window?
Should we tolerate them or try to instruct them or avoid them? Or will the situation be always there or can this be...
Probably there'll always be such persons. From Srila Prabhupada's example and that of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I see that they tried to engage people in Krishna conscious activities for their purification. They wouldn't necessarily smash all the, or tend to smash all the various impurities or deviations. Although when there was the, in Los Angeles, when was that? Approximately 1974?
72?
No, I think it must have been, actually it must have been later, maybe 75, because they were reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, which didn't, most of it didn't come out until 1975. So anyway, when Srila Prabhupada heard that there were a group of his disciples who were concentrating only on reading the very highly intimate sections from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and they declared not to have any taste for Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada became extremely disturbed, and he stopped this. He was very strongly against it. Srila Prabhupada said, first deserve, then desire. Because the devotees were saying that, well, we're just trying to cultivate a desire for the higher levels of bhakti. Srila Prabhupada said, first deserve, then desire. We sing every day to Srila Prabhupada, prema bhakti jaha hoite. From him there is prema bhakti. Je prasade pure sarva asha. By his mercy, all our desires will be fulfilled. That means not desires for dharma, artha, kama and moksha, but desires in bhakti. So it is good to know the ultimate goal that we are heading for, which is to dance with Krishna in Vrindavan. But it's also good to know our present position and to act under guidance accordingly. Otherwise, as Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj stated, that persons without a transcendental conception, if they're always talking about gopis, they'll end up taking birth as ordinary women. They have no transcendental conception and they're always thinking of women, see, and that's what they get. Yadrishi yadrishi shraddha siddhi bhavati tadrishi. You get what you aim for, what, where, according to your concept, you get the result. So it's very useful for us to, again and again, consider Jive Surup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das, the basis of all service, whether as a gopi or a butterfly or whatever in Vrindavan, is service to Krishna, acting for his pleasure. And we do, of course, find in the prayers of our acharyas desires to become gopis, Raja Gopi Bhav, Hoy Shobhav, my nature will be that of a gopi of Vrindavan, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings. But that's based on the very solid foundation of surrender to Krishna. This comes in Sharanagati. And acting only for his pleasure. It's very interesting that these prayers come at the end of Sharanagati, the collection of songs, that when one is fully surrendered, then this is the goal awaiting one. But one has to go through all the, one has to have all the limbs of Sharanagati. So, you had a question?
Srimad Bhagavatam states about himself that it is the essence of Vedic scriptures, and these things. But and some person maybe will not want to accept it out of its circular reasoning.
Circular reasoning, yeah. All right.
Srimad Bhagavatam sám o sobě tvrdí, že největší esencí vědeckých textů, ale některé osoby to nemusí přijímat, protože vlastně on sám o sobě tyto věci tvrdí.
Well, it's just like the advertisements. They say, you know, Persil is the best kind of soap powder. You think, well, why should we accept it? The Persil company is saying that Persil is the best. Of course they're going to say they're the best. But then if they give a scientific analysis that showing how Persil, I mean, of course, this, I don't know whether which is the best soap, but I'm just saying as an example that, you know, it has, it does this and it does that for your cloth. It cleans it without spoiling it, and it's also well priced, and all in all, it's the best deal. So if they do a neutral analysis, scientific analysis, and show that it's the best, then you can understand that they're not just claiming that, but it actually is the best. Of course, you have to be careful if the company itself is giving a scientific analysis, because, as we all know, there are lies, damned lies, and statistics. But Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't just state that, well, this is the best. Just like we find, you know, dogmatic religionists. You have to believe in the Bible. It says in the Bible. You don't get this, but maybe you get them in Czech nowadays, is it? Everything's everywhere. But this is part of life in America. It's more like you get friendly. It's in the Bible. And, you know, you're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to just immediately on the spot forget everything that you ever heard or said or thought about, and just because some fanatic is coming and shouting in your face, it's in the Bible. But the Bhagavatam describes why it is the best. Bhagavatam is the best because it uproots the threefold miseries by giving Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. How is that affected? Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate. By giving systematic scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. We won't find anywhere else in the Vedic literature or in any other literature any description of the supreme truth that matches the first verse of Bhagavatam. Just by studying the first verse of Bhagavatam, all the, you know, they should just close all the church or convert them into temples of Krishna, because, you know, it just completely leaves them in the dust. They have no, all the theological speculations which they've done for 2,000 years. Don't even, it doesn't get even past the first line of the Bhagavatam. So this is not a dogmatic statement. Read it. I'll try to understand it and see. The actually, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, whose name you may have heard, he's a leading devotee in our society. He goes to interfaith meetings, and he presents the Rupa Goswami's analysis of karma and how the topmost uttama bhakti is that which is pure devotion without the covering of fruitive activities or mental speculation. He said you can apply this in any religion, to any religion, and just see how this is superior. So that Srimad Bhagavatam states that it is best is not... And generally when you hear someone praise themselves, you think, uh-oh, watch out, he's a cheater. But on the other hand, if someone does have something good which they want to share with others, they have to tell others that here's something good. And for Vyasadeva to pretend that the Srimad Bhagavatam is just, you know, take it or leave it, one or the other, it's just the same as everything else, would simply increase the confusion. Just like Srila Prabhupada used to say, that you don't know who is God. People say, well, how can you say that Krishna is God? And Prabhupada said, well, if you have anyone better who fits the description of God, then tell us. If you don't, you should accept Krishna. If we see, what do we understand by the meaning of God? Who is supreme? He who is supreme. So just see, what is the definition of supreme? Srimad Bhagavatam gives that definition. Again, see the first line of the Bhagavatam. And Krishna fits that. So try to understand. Bhagavatam itself exhorts us to understand scientifically, not dogmatically. That's why Srila Prabhupada spoke philosophy day after day after day. Because he wanted devotees to understand. Surrender is an act which intelligent persons can do. It's not done simply on the out of sentiment. Okay, let's finish then. It's getting... You'd ask me to say something to the brahmacharis? Who was that? Alright. Well, they asked me also. Actually, I've asked in many places to say to the brahmacharis various things. I already said a lot in that book, The Brahmachari and Krishna Consciousness. So, generally, it seems that brahmacharis think that brahmachari meeting means, you know, how not to get married. But actually, if that's the basis of your brahmachari life, then it's not strong. It should be more positive. It should be more like that. What are we doing to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas? Not just, you know, hold on as long as you can, but that with being free from family encumbrance, one can fully surrender to the mission of Srila Prabhupada, the Sankirtan mission. So do something significant. That's what I will say to the brahmacharis today. And if you are a brahmachari, it's a good opportunity, so take advantage of it. Study, serve, preach, live purely and simply. It is a great opportunity. Take full advantage of it. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, we'll finish there. Hare Krishna. As you know, most of you know, I'm always trying to distribute my books and CDs because whatever I have to say, it's, as Srila Prabhupada said, whatever I have to say is in my books. So I have some copies here in English, which most of you don't know. But if anyone would like, you can come and take them here.